Well, morning, everyone. If we haven't met, my name's Jonah. I'm on team here. I oversee the prison work, so that means I get to spend a lot of time inside Exeter, and we're starting to spend a bit more time in Dartmoor, which is really exciting. As Pete said, we're in the middle of this series called God Has a Name. The phrase and the line that all of us have kind of been riffing off is from this guy called A.W. Tozer. And Tozer says this thing, that what we think about God is the most important thing about ourselves. So what this series, I think, is the aim, and I haven't asked Pete if it is, but this is my guess. What I think this series, the aim is that as we understand more about God and as we look through the story of the Bible, and we understand the names that God has given us to say about himself that reveal something about God's nature, we begin to understand more of who he is, and we begin to shape a more truthful image of who he is in our minds. And the way that I found it helpful preparing for this this talk, and maybe similar to Tozer's kind of angle, is something that this other guy says, and he basically really simply says, when we know what's going on, we know what to do. And what I quite like about that is it's this kind of quite like simple, basic image that when we know what's going on, so when we know what stories we inhabit, when we know what stories we may be, when we can see the unconscious stories that we inhabit, we then know what to do from that place. So this series, the way that I've kind of viewed it, is a way that we can situate ourselves more deeply in the story of God. God who is faithful to Israel and ultimately faithful to humankind. This is best summarized, we believe, don't we, in Jesus. And Jesus for us as Christians is the ultimate story that we apprentice ourselves to. And I think the question rapidly becomes when we start looking at these names and as we start looking at where these names come from, is how do we apprentice ourselves to the stories that we hear to become more formed as people of love and as people made in the image and the shape of God? And the thing that I want to speak about today is Yahweh Shema. And Nathan, if you could put up this slide. I don't know if this is going to be helpful, but I was procrastinating last night and did this. And basically what this slide shows is the entirety of Ezekiel. The whole book, all 48 chapters. And then you can just see the tiny little yellow writing here. And this is Yahweh Shema. The Lord is here. And what I wanted to show us this morning is that this Yahweh Shema is not spoken from a void. It's not spoken out of context and is kind of just like a nice sentiment that we're going to say this morning. It's spoken from this rich narrative that we find in the book of Ezekiel. I made a gag with Nathan when I got this up that I was going to pretend that we were just going to read through the whole thing. This is our Bible reading. We're not going to do that. But Yahweh Shema is this phrase uttered by Ezekiel. And what we discover with this phrase is that it's this remarkably bold and contradictory statement for the situation that Ezekiel finds himself in. This phrase is formed and born out of a place of exile and hopelessness. And as we turn to Ezekiel, we discover someone who has apprenticed themselves to a story so deeply that they completely contradict the dominant narrative of their time. And this contradiction becomes, I believe, the greatest place of hope in the book. There we go. And that place of hope is summarized in Yahweh Shema, the last three words in this book. And when we read Ezekiel, we realize that Yahweh Shema, God is there, the Lord is there, is not only a hopeful declaration about the future dwelling place of God, but Yahweh Shema is also a revelation and a promise of God's presence in the place of exile and hopelessness for each of us today. And what I believe we discover in Ezekiel is that we often hear the hopeful voice of God and experience the presence of God most clearly in places of despair, hopelessness, and impossibility. And my sense this morning is that there are some of us in the room who, even as I say that, are too frightened, and I speak for myself as well, are too frightened to face the reality of some of the broken situations in our lives. And to you, my prayer is that by the end of this time together, you will hear the still small voice of God declaring over you that I am here. In the midst of your pain, in the midst of your shame, in the midst of the brokenness and despair that you face, I am here. That's what we discover with Yahweh Shema. My prayer, and what I feel like we discover with Ezekiel as he kind of embodies this, is that we are able to reckon rightly with the reality of our situation, the entirety of the brokenness of this situation, the pain that we all face, and we're able to move towards a more hopeful future with Yahweh present. So who is Ezekiel? If you haven't read Ezekiel, don't. No, I'm joking. Do. It's a weird book. Let's be honest. So it's 48 chapters of pretty trippy stuff. It's kind of got Ezekiel shaves his head at one point, goes out into the street and does kind of weird theater street acting. He then lies on his side for quite a while. And I think he cooks food over human feces or remains. It's odd. Read it. It's one of those books that is like, you kind of think, gosh, Christianity's a lot weirder than I thought, and we know Christianity's quite weird. But to give a bit of context, Ezekiel was a priest who had been living in Jerusalem as Jerusalem was kind of under siege. And there's this attack on the city, Jerusalem. The Babylonians come, they attack Jerusalem, and they take effectively some prisoners of war. And they extract Ezekiel and some other folk from the city and take them to Babylon. The city itself was spared, but the king of Babylon thought it was a good idea to take prisoners with him. So this book basically begins 5 years after this traumatic event of Ezekiel being extracted from the place that he knew and loved. I think there's some profound image that I couldn't really work out in time. But this book basically begins on Ezekiel's 30th birthday, which would have been the moment where he is kind of inaugurated and welcomed as a priest into the temple. So this book basically begins in national despair, but also deeply personal despair. Ezekiel is in exile, and he's sitting there knowing full well that if he was in Jerusalem, he would be doing what he feels the Lord has called him to, which is be a priest in the temple. And what's really helpful for us to understand, and what I think this image is helpful for us to understand, is that Yahweh Shema, the Lord is here, is spoken from a place of exile. The nation of Israel was at its lowest ebb in its history, spiritually and nationally. And the book itself, Ezekiel, is split into two sections. I'm just basically going to chronicle the book of Ezekiel because I think that's what helps us most faithfully live out what the Lord is saying to us this morning. So this may just feel quite a lot like we're just going to walk through the whole book. I won't read through the whole book, I promise. But section one is kind of chapter 1 to 22. And what this section is marked by is, firstly, it's before the city has fallen. So Ezekiel's been taken out. The city is still standing. It's under siege from the Babylonians. And the people are effectively in denial. Death and collapse is inevitable. When you read Ezekiel, you will realize that the Lord is trying to say to his people, the city will fall and my presence will depart. And as we hear that now, we live in the wake of Jesus and the idea of the absence of God. We can't comprehend this, but for the Israelites and for Ezekiel, he is trying to communicate that Yahweh, God, is saying, I am going to leave the temple. And that is like, in those days, you know, none of you look that shocked. We would have all been like, But for these guys, they're completely in denial. None of the Israelites can really face this. And Ezekiel is like shouting it, crying it out, acting it out, shaving his head. Don't know what that represents. And he's saying, Yahweh is going to leave. We are going to be without his presence. And the thing that marks the Israelites as unique is that they are a people marked by presence. That is the very thing that makes them unique. All the other monotheistic religions and cults of that time were marked by an absent deity, whereas for Israel, they were marked by the presence of God. You'll know all the phrases, right? Moses saying, I don't want to go here unless your presence is, all those stuff. It's all in that. It's all about presence for the Israelites. And Ezekiel is saying this. He's saying, guys, if we don't get our act together, the city is going to fall and Yahweh is going to leave. There is going to be a time of shocking absence. And then there's this moment in chapter 33, this kind of really, really shocking moment, when effectively a prisoner of war escapes the city, and he comes and finds Ezekiel, and he says, the city has fallen. And this is where the book, there's like this gear shift. And it goes from this book, basically, of hopelessness and prophecies against Israel and against the neighboring cities. Ezekiel kind of criticizing every man and their dog under the sun. And we enter into this second section, which is chapters 33 to 48, where hope is spoken out. Failure is embraced by the people. They cannot deny it. The city has fallen. So failure has to be embraced. And this next section contains some of the most hopeful, prophetic images that we find in the Bible. And it ends with this kind of epic vision of full restoration and revelation of a city called Yahweh Shammah. So this tiny yellow line on the screen is this moment at the end of the second section where Ezekiel has this vivid vision of a city. And he ends the book by saying, and what we've got to remember is this is in absence. This is in exile. It ends with Ezekiel saying there will be a city, and that city will be called the Lord is there. This remarkable, hopeful image. And that city, Ezekiel says, is marked by God's rule of justice, mercy, and it will be where God dwells forever. But what I think the Lord wants to say to us this morning, and what I think is vital that we see in this book, is for that city, that city to be announced at the end of that book, another city had to fall. Ezekiel had to receive the truth, and the people of Israel had to receive the truth and accept it, that the city had fallen, that they were in denial would, to be able to receive the new city from God. Yahweh Shammah, we learn, can only be declared once Yahweh is absent and has been, and that's been received and acknowledged. That is what Ezekiel shows us. And Yahweh Shammah, we learn, is most hopefully uttered from a place of desolation. Ezekiel prophesies this radical vision of hope in the midst of destruction. This vision, I think, when I was sitting with it, can only be received and believed once the false vision has been let go of. Often we can only really believe that God is faithful and is with us when we've acknowledged the death and pain in our lives, when we've let go of the places that aren't alive. And we're able then to receive the newness of God because we're not clinging to a construction that we've made. Declaring that God is there, Yahweh Shammah, in the midst of such seeming despair is only possible when we've come to the end of ourselves and we accept that God is the only one who can save, the only one who can redeem, the only one who can pull us out of that place of hopelessness. And I've had the privilege recently of being in Exeter prison with a man who has done some pretty horrific stuff. He's committed some pretty awful crimes, and will probably more than likely spend a decade, maybe two, in prison because of this. But what I've learned from spending time with him, and what I've learned from speaking to him, is this ability that I think we see embodied with Ezekiel to reckon rightly with our brokenness, to reckon rightly with the despair and hopelessness in our lives. And what I've witnessed is that as we've sat, and he's repeated almost those words from Paul over and over, the Romans 12 stuff of I do what I don't want to do, and I don't do what I do want to do. He says this, all this stuff, as he's caught in this cycle of shame and addiction. And what I've noticed and what I've recognized is that as we sit there, facing the reality of this horrific situation, the harm done to him and the harm that he has done, hope arises as we bring it into the presence of God. And that's not just like a trite kind of analogy. It's like a tangible sense of the presence of God and the grace of God that God would love in this moment and bring new life, even in the midst of such pain and despair. And what I've seen in my life echoes this as well. When I've been at my lowest point, in places of deep, deep despair, when I've brought this pain and despair into the presence of a loving God and into the light with others in my life, I have found that a miraculous wellspring of hope bubbles up in that place of pain. A new word is spoken that only God can speak. And when the Israelites realized that Jerusalem had fallen, Yahweh had departed from the temple, and that they were in exile, God finally permitted Ezekiel to speak a new word of hope. And that word could only come from God. And in this place, Ezekiel saw dry bones come to life. A city, a new city, where God will dwell, his presence will return. And he was able to declare Yahweh Shammah, God is there. He will be with us again, even in exile, Ezekiel says. And this time may be marked by brutal absence, but we can have hope. He will return. And we know this in truth, that this true that this new city has in some shape begun. Jesus has come to earth, is alive and reigns today. What Ezekiel prophesied, Jesus inaugurates, right? And today we find hope as we sit in the tension of the claim that it is finished and the reality that there's still a full fulfillment to come. But what I believe this morning and what I sensed in my being for each of us is that there are people in this room this morning that carry within them and know, as I'm speaking about this, places of death, places of despair, places of hopelessness and amnesia, where we've forgotten what it means to be followers of God and believe in the hope of God in those areas of our lives. And what I believe Jesus wants to do this morning is help us face them as Ezekiel did. Discover the new life that rushes in after we've done that. After we've done that act of recognizing the death and naming it for what it is. The city has fallen, let hope arise. And this isn't just like a nice like wink to God, right? This isn't just like, here's my hard stuff, God. Like, come on, do your thing. This is a deep reckoning with the places that we really actually believe are impossible to change. I felt really stirred this week to speak into like actual impossibility. Like, where in your life are you actually living with kind of a practical atheism? Where you're like, I kind of believe that there's this stuff that you can change, Lord, but I've ring-fenced this situation off, and I'm actually living as a practical atheist, not believing that, Lord, you could move, and that there could hope could rise up from that place. We're ignoring sometimes, I feel, I do this, I'm speaking from experience, I ignore places in my life. And these places, I think often we're meant to have walked away from a long time ago or faced them properly. And this morning, God is saying those places, that city has fallen. Let hope arise. Let me speak a new word of hope into that dead place. And maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's a secret addiction. Maybe it's that slight over-reliance on alcohol or a substance that gets you through the week. Maybe it's a failed business, a failed relationship. Maybe it's a subtle addiction to comfort. Whatever it is, we ring fence off situations and don't allow God's new word, hope, to be spoken into it. And I believe this is a moment this morning for us to recognize that that place is in desperate need of a new word of hope. And that can only be spoken when we've reckoned with the reality of its death and the pain of it. We believe as Christians that at the point of death, new life emerges. That's the unique insight of the Christian faith. We declare that at the hinge point of history, the most powerful moment in our story is at this null point, this seemingly hopeless point, the cross. At the point of seeming defeat, at the culmination of the greatest loss on earth, a new word is uttered, a new reality is spoken, and the sound of dry bones rattle as we hear our King declare, "It is finished." And human history has never been the same. What Ezekiel prophesies, Jesus inaugurates. We witness to a God who came to earth in flesh and did not shy away from the places of exile and despair, but moved towards them in deep love, declaring that there can be hope found in the most hopeless places. And just to land, my sense is that there are some people this morning who find themselves in places of exile. Their lives are shaky, insecurities are starting to rise, cracks are appearing round the edges. Something maybe seismic has happened to you over these last few months, and you're frightened. You're frightened to face the reality of the brokenness that you know is bubbling underneath the surface, the reality of the pain and chaos of the confusion. And I believe this word is for you this morning. God is wanting to say to you this morning that that city has fallen. But hold on. Have hope. There is a city that is arriving and has arrived, and his name is Jesus. And that city is not marked by absence, but is marked by a hopeful presence in the presence of our Savior. What we think about God is the most important thing about ourselves. And what Ezekiel teaches us, I believe this morning, is that in the midst of despair and mourning, hope arises afresh. Not from our good ideas, but from a gracious God who pours out his presence into our lives. And in a moment, we are going to gather around this table. And can I encourage you that as you draw close to this table, bring the places of desolation in your lives. Bring the places of impossibility. Bring the places of exile. Bring the places that you've ring-fenced around and that you're living with as just an accepted norm. It doesn't have to be. And I believe that this morning, God wants to speak a word of hope into those places.